If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'll take you for a ride on the devil's ship. I'll take you for a ride where you sink or swim. Now come with me and let this story begin.
Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Very happy to have you. We're going to go to the writer's strike, the actor's strike. I have a question, but before, did you know that in 98, you were in Arrival 2?
Yep.
Which had nothing to do with The Arrival, but then you were also in 2016 in the movie The Arrival.
Yeah.
Fucking random shit that the universe gives you, right? Isn't that?
Yeah.
Did you think about it at the time?
The Arrival had nothing to do with The Arrival
nothing.
2.
That's
Arrival
why it's 2 even was, more random.
It was technically a sequel
to
the original one with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, it was Arrival, The Arrival 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was with Patrick Muldoon back then. Yeah, it was a fun time. Movie was okay. But, you know,
most of those at the time.
I mean, I've done some really good movies that I'm proud of, and I've done some other ones that, you know, were, you know, crap. But it's like, you know, you always, acting is fun. Even when it's not doing well or not, you know, I don't care. It's fun. You're working, right? So, like, I did a movie that was but it was for the Sci-Fi Channel. And we shot it in Brazil with my wife and Stephen Baldwin. And so people say, why'd you do that movie? It's because I spent a month and a half in Brazil and got paid for it.
Yeah, I had fun. This is my life.
It's like Michael Caine. Why did you do Jaws 4? He said, because it paid for my house in the Bahamas.
That's a good answer.
So, there, bingo.
You've accomplished something that every actor that I've spoken to kind of strives for, but they don't always get, is longevity in acting.
Yeah.
That's another
way of saying you're old.
No. It is so. Go look at people's IMDb. The hardest thing is, you see, especially now, it's kind of like, it seems long if in 5 years, within a 5 year span, they've been doing movies.
Right.
Not going to the 90s and it's very hard. And you've already achieved that, which is insane.
Right.
It's amazing. Does it ever pop in your head? You're like, God damn, when did I start? What am I doing? How the hell have I been able to do this for this long? You've been in so much stuff that we've seen you.
I've been lucky. Yeah. I mean, really, it's what it boils down to. I don't need these headsets.
You're not a guy who needs them.
I kind of fell into it back in the beginning. I'd done some, like, a little bit of extra work, and if people want to become actors, I suggest you do a bit of extra work so you can get onto a set and find out what a set is like. But don't just sit there and read a book. Watch the actors, how they prepare. Watch the director and how he does his directions and stuff. Blocking and all the other stuff and finding your mark and everything else. You can learn a lot, but I wouldn't do a lot of extra work if you want to be an actor, because you don't get pegged as an extra. And it's two separate things.
Yeah, right? Once you get pegged as an extra, it's kind of hard to get out of that.
Yeah, so, I was with my wife, well, not my wife at the time, my girlfriend at the time, and Jane Heitmeyer, and she got a part on this TV series called Sirens, which was a cop show that was shot back here in 1994 with Robin Spry and Tellefson. And I was talking to her agent, and her agent said, do you want to be an extra on it? And I went, no, I'll pass on that. She goes, you want to try out for a role? And I went, yeah, that'd be fun.
Oh, look at that. Right? What an upgrade.
I said, okay. I said, what do you do? She goes, let me work it up, and we'll see what we can do. I said, okay. And then that night she goes, okay, you're going in for this part. I'll fax you over.
You're dating yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I'll fax you over the lines, the sides. So get a photo, headshot, resume, and go on in tomorrow. And I went, great. I said, what's a headshot? You know, so anyway, picture yourself, right? So I got the headshot, I went in, and they'd actually, the part I was going in for, they'd already cast, but they cast me for another one. So my very first audition, I got a role, and that was cool.
Who does that?
Yeah, so, and it was cool, because my girlfriend at the time has this big love scene with her husband, and then he comes downstairs, and he gets shot and killed, and for two episodes, she's going around trying to find out who killed her husband and why. And I killed her husband.
Oh, so, there we go. Yeah. Wow. That's romantic.
Yeah. And they didn't know that at the time, but they kind of liked it. So I said, well, yeah, I mean, you're a squirrel with my girlfriend. You go down. So that was like June the 5th, 1994. And I sat on set, and I said to myself, this is fun. This is
you got the bug, you got the itch.
It's, you know, yeah. So I said, I'm going to give it a shot. And at that time, like I DJed for many years, in clubs and stuff like that.
Guido was telling me that you DJed.
Yeah. Yeah. I did that from the time I was 16. So, you know,
how did you get into that?
I started in high school, but that was back in the day when, you know, mobile DJs didn't exist. We just kind of invented things as we went along.
And we're talking about real DJ turntables. Oh, we're not talking about vinyl, click and play.
Vinyl. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you had to have an engineering degree to try to make a record go backwards. You know, now you press a button. But, yeah, so I started working back in the disco days. And this city, you can't compare what this city was like now to what it was back then.
It used to be a real city.
Oh, yeah. It was just, it was the second most important city for dance and disco. The clubs were everywhere. I mean, you would go to Montreal, you know, you could hit 20 clubs in the space of an hour.
And good ones.
Yeah, every one was a good one. I mean, so I started at the Altatec 727 when I was 16. They never asked how old I was. I was run by the Queenie Hotel at the time. That was on top of Place Ville Marie. And I had my 18th birthday there. And the guy said, how old are you? I said, 18. He says, you worked here for 2 years. I said, yeah.
Don't ask questions,
you
Steve.
You never asked. Then during the Olympics, it was Harlequin in the Four Seasons. And everybody who was anybody who was here for the Olympics came to the Harlequin. And so, you know, I mean, it was just a I mean, clubs were open 7 days a week, and they worked. And, you know, there was like, you know, I mean, okay, I'll give you an example. If you're on a Mountain Street, you know, you walk up to the Maisonneuve back in the day, depending on, you know, what year it was, you know, it was the Playboy Club, it was Valerie's, it was September's, which I worked at for 6 years in the 80s. Harlow's was next door downstairs. You go down the street, you got Bogart's, and you go to the John Bull Pub. You keep going to Don Juan's, you'd hang a right, you'd go to the Tube. On the left side was Dominic's, and these are all in like 76, 77, 79, huge clubs everywhere. You had like pretty well the two most important clubs aside from Studio 54
were in this
New
city.
York. We're in this city, which was Limelight and 1234.
1234 was big even since then.
Oh, God. Yeah. It opened up August, I think about August 5th or 7th, I believe. It was a Tuesday, 1978.
Oh, you got a great memory.
Yeah. So, well, I was the first customer in there, me and my light man and the two girls. And we just went because it was an open bar. We said, okay, see you later. Go dance. And stayed at the bar. But yeah, it was a hell of a club. I worked at Studio 55 back then, which was another great location. And then there was Don Juan's, Yesterday's, September's, like I said, but that goes more into the 80s. So I went into the 80s, but I also worked in New York. I worked in Chicago. I did Miami, Acapulco, Cancun, Puerto Vallarta.
In your head, it was all, you thought, DJ, that's my thing.
Yeah. I mean, I wish, you know, I was DJing today because they're making a hell of a lot more money than we made. But we were okay. You know, I mean, I worked at one place in New York, which was a competition to Studio 54. And, you know, because what happened was club owners on the Eastern Seaboard would come up to Montreal to buy their sound and lighting because the best sound and lighting companies were here in Montreal because of the European aspect and the lighting that came over from Europe and everything. So you had Disco Spec and Lumibec and these companies. So they would go, and then the owner, what they would do is they would go to like the owner of Studio 55 and say, okay, we're going to put your lights in for free. And then they would use it as a showroom. So they would bring club owners up from all across, like, you know, from Atlanta, from Florida, New York. They would come up and they'd see the lights in action. And the owners would come up and I kept getting job offers, right?
And yeah, they'd see the lights and the DJ.
So one guy came up and he says, why don't you start working my place in New York? And I was a cocky, you know, 21-year-old at the time. I said, yeah, you can't afford me. He says, yeah, what do you want? I said, all right, well, I said, New York, I'm going to have an apartment. I'm going to have a car. I'm going to have airfare back and forth because I got to see, you know, my family. My light man comes with me, and I don't know, $1 a head per person that comes through the door. He says, you start Thursday.
Oh, he called your bluff.
Okay, so it's like, all right. And it was the competition to Studio 54 at the time, because it was 54, and there was also a place that I had no idea about the size and everything else called Xenon's.
How big was that?
They get about 2,000 people on a Thursday. They'd probably get 3,500 on a Friday and 5,000 on a Saturday. It was huge, right? And I'm making $1 a head here, cash. Oh, no.
The good old days.
Okay. And do you think I'm thinking of, you know, stock market, you know, you know, bonds and stuff? No, we would leave Friday night. We go to the Stage Delicatessen for breakfast. Then we'd wait up. Then we'd go to LaGuardia or Kennedy, get on the first flight available. We'd fly down to Miami or Fort Lauderdale. We'd be on the beach in like 3 or 4 hours, stay on the beach, and then fly back to New York and then go to work. And that's what we used to do.
Fun life, though, at that time. You're young, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, in retrospect, oh, shit.
Should save some of that money.
Put it into Microsoft. You know what I'm saying?
If but, you knew, who knew?
But yeah, I mean, I did parties for the Jacksons, Phil Collins at Genesis. It was a great time. And one day I will write a movie script.
I was about to say either a movie script or a book. Something
it's gonna
has
be
to
be a
come.
Movie script, and it's going to be just about all the adventures. And we'll call it "They Only Come Out at Night."
They Only Come Out at Night is a good title.
Yeah, and then I mean, I never thought about acting at all, right? And then I did a little extra work back in another terrible movie. It was called Dirty Tricks with Kate Jackson and Elliot Gould back in 1979. And that just gave me an indication of what it was like, and I didn't really think anything of it. Went into the 80s, clubs again. Met my future wife in 88. I mean, I was on radio at the time now. I'd gotten into radio in 86.
How'd you get into that?
Again, fell into it. I got to do a radio show because of the mixing.
But you have a voice for radio. You can
I mean, you know, it came along. I mean, I listen to myself sometimes. I actually have some recordings back in from 1979 of me. Like, I was doing a live show on, it's called CLFM, which is 98.5 now. And listening to myself, and I just cringe.
It's always like that when you listen to yourself.
But then I did Mix 96. I did that in 88 for a couple of years and didn't really pay enough money. So Mario Tremblay took that over. And if I'd known it was going to go 30 years or whatever, and he would have made millions of dollars on all the CDs he did and everything. Anyway, but he was a good guy. I like
whatever happened to MC Mario?
He's still around. Yeah, we just did a disco party back in April down at the old Hyatt, and it got about 600-700 people all dressed up in disco stuff. And,
God damn, I remember it was such a voice of my childhood.
Yep.
MC Mario. Yeah, I remember that so vividly, and I was too young, so I never got to see what he looks like. Yeah. I never got to meet him.
Oh, well, I'll have to get him here for you.
I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah. I can get Mario here. Give him a call.
Nice guy, huh?
He's a great guy.
Okay, yeah. Very cool.
And then, you know, I did, then I started a radio show on CFQR in 2001, and that lasted 10 years. So did that for a while. And radio was great, but the problem with radio is I got into it. I was probably one of the last guys who had a show where I programmed my own music, and I could say whatever I wanted to say, do whatever I wanted to do, have whoever. Because that's unheard of now.
Oh, no.
You know, now it's like music, 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 and they cut you off down to 10 seconds, 5 seconds, or whatever.
They don't even get professionals anymore.
Well, they don't need them. It's all machines, and. The thing was, is it wasn't fun anymore, So, I learned one thing. I will never do something that I don't like because I don't want it to be a job. Yeah. Right. So, it's the acting again, 94, I was still acting. And still I stopped working as a DJ in clubs, started running clubs, back in the early 90s. I think the last club I worked at full time was probably La Mactoire on VO Street in the East End.
Okay.
And that was probably 1990. Then I opened up the Ozone, which was the old Septembers. That was for about a year. Then I worked at, was running Neville's with Neville back on Mountain Street, another great place to go on Tuesday nights. Club Extreme until 94. Then I went out to the West Island. And that's where. It was back in 97, and I was actually working acting and working the clubs at the same time. And I got, actually, funnily enough, The Arrival 2.
All right.
And so I was working at the club till 3 and, being called
5 a.m.
at 5 a.m., right? So it just killed me. So I made the big decision that, okay, I'm going to stop the clubs and I'm going to become an actor. And that's what I did. I became a working actor. After The Arrival 2, I didn't work for 6 months. I
was like, of all movies that motivate you, it's The Arrival 2.
Just because I like sleep. You know what I'm saying? So, I've been very lucky. I came up at a time in this city where there was actually a lot of work. There was tons of shows being done. I was lucky enough to get some roles in some really, really popular series like Student Bodies.
I remember Student Bodies.
Cody's dad. Back to Sherwood, where I played the sheriff of Nottingham and just shamelessly ripped off Alan Rickman any way I could. Somebody says, what's acting? It's like being a kid again and playing with better toys because, you know, the guns really work and you're doing this and you're doing that and you're jumping over cars and you don't really do it. Your stunt guy does it, but, you know, makes you look good, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's working with people. I mean, even now, I mean, I've been in it for, 30 years. And you still get I got a part where I was working on a movie with Michelle Pfeiffer, right? And it's just me and her and doing this scene. And we were shooting it the whole day. But
I used to have a big crush on her when I was young.
Oh, so did I. She's throwing Mrs. that Scarface. Out there. Come on, okay? Amazing person to work with.
She seems nice. Okay, she is genuine. Okay, good.
She was really, really nice. And I'm amazing to work with again. And it's like... Jason Sudeikis is another great actor I worked with on a play, a thing called The Race. And again, here's a guy, he's such a great actor. You will always learn, always, continually. You can never learn enough when it comes to acting. It's just the stuff I learned from this guy was just great. And he's doing Ted Lasso now, he did. Who else?
What is it? I've always wanted Sudeikis. What is that?
I don't know, actually. That's a good point. I don't know what nationality it is, but a great guy.
Seems cool.
And, I mean, I have been lucky that there's been a few people that have been,
iffy, but mostly
but
good.
Mostly they've been really, really fun to work with. I did a movie last year, which is coming out this year, called Longing, which is with Richard Gere.
Oh, shit.
And again, just... It wasn't work. It was, and the scenes where we had a lot of scenes in the cemetery, this cemetery that takes place, because apparently the movie is that my daughter, she killed herself. His son died in an accident, but he didn't realize he had a son. So he basically comes to town to find out what his son was like. And we meet in the cemetery and we strike up a conversation and then we have long conversations about our kids and stuff.
So it's like a good movie, and also
Richard
Gere.
It's just I mean, it's just you look up at the sky and you go, "Thank you. This is really cool."
Yeah, you got not just the longevity, but you get these moments.
I've been lucky again. Dolph Lundgren. I've done about 3 or 4 movies with. He was a lot of fun. The action guy. He was
best
a lot of fun.
Guy.
And who else was, Sean Young. She was interesting. I'll leave it at that.
I was going to say, is that? he's Lithuanian-German Sudeikis. All right,
there we go. Okay.
Thank you, Poseidon.
See? That's why he gets paid the big
bucks.
That's
why he gets the big bucks, this guy. I don't want to forget. So writer's strike is over.
Yeah.
Actor strike right now.
Still on.
It's still on. Yeah. And the thing I didn't get, and that's why, people ask me, but I don't know. So I'm going to ask you, who knows. The fight right now, is it mostly for rights on, because AI is trying to come in.
Right.
So we're trying to make sure that the actors keep their rights and you can't just steal their likeness.
Well, yeah.
And recreate them. That's one of the things, right?
Well, the first thing that happened was the sticking point with the writers was that, AI is going to write scripts, right? So they're concerned about that because, again, it's their livelihood. And the deal they came up with is, yes, and writers now contractually do not have to write. They have to work on a script. It has to be written
by a human.
So acting is twofold. One is streaming and residuals. Now, residuals is like you get paid to do a part in a movie. In Canada and the States, it's a little bit different. In the States, it's you get paid and then you will get residuals, right? How much the movie airs, where does it air? And because streaming came along, it wasn't anything there. So, you know, streamers are making tons of money and the actors are getting minuscule amounts.
You can have a hit movie. Everyone's watching. They're making millions off it. Yeah. And because it wasn't included in the initial concept of how we're going to distribute these films, you'll get zero.
Yeah, well, minuscule, right? So that's one of the key things. The other thing is the AI, because they basically want to take your you, and once they have enough of you, AI can make you do anything and say anything you want.
I've seen what they said, and it's very scary. They said
you don't need actors.
No, they said take your likeness and own it in perpetuity, exactly. Which means they have one good movie of you, and they have all the angles that they need. Yep. I don't need Larry Day anymore.
No, but we can do this. You know, so that's the key big aspect. And it's you know, AI is, to me, it's dangerous. I mean, Terminator, you know.
No, it's for a lot, and for work, I just had a podcast about this, and we're talking, it's so, because there's a lot of stuff that AI is doing that's going to make our lives so much easier.
Right.
So because of that, we're not thinking of the cons that this, it's going to change our economy completely.
Well, yeah, but you're also forgetting to the point, though, is that, for every good thing for AI,
there's a bad thing
for AI. Because right now, a perfect example is they're using AI to mimic people's voices, and they're calling grandmothers, and they sound just like the kids, and it's convincing them even more to get ripped off. Right? It's the same thing with dare I say, China. Yeah, I mean, they don't think in 5 years or 10 years; they think in decades. And what they want to do is they want to be the global superpower, and Yes, you can have a way to use AI, and you can have your rules, and you can have everything else.
Not everyone's going to play by those rules.
Not everybody's going to play by the rules, right? And so what happens, you get, military AIs going to run a war,
I think they're already doing that. I had read something about that.
You're going to have, look how war has changed with all the stuff that's going on with drones and everything else. I mean, I'm glad I'm how old I am.
You got to live the real years where everything was analog.
Yeah, because I just, going forward, it really scares the hell out of me. And, the economy, how it is to buy a house these days.
Impossible.
I feel for the generation. It's the Generation Z, I believe it is. They're the new ones right now.
Yeah, the ones right now, yeah.
They're going to have to toughen up.
Because, they got screwed. They got the short end of that.
They're the first generation, actually, which is not going to do as well as the previous generation, which
and through
sucks.
No fault of their own.
No.
They were thrown into this.
Yeah, So, I mean, they called COVID boomer remover, but...
Wait, the negotiations, are they looking good?
They're still negotiating. I mean, I'm doing a series right now called Welcome to Derry.
So exciting.
It's for HBO Max, 9 episodes. It's a prequel to the It movies. So you're going to find out exactly how Pennyworth became and what the entity really is and stuff. So it's really cool. And, unfortunately, half of our cast is between 10 and 14. Now we've shot 3 episodes. We have another 6 to go. We stopped shooting in July. And now we're not.
These kids
are going
to grow, though.
That's the problem.
Okay. I'm not crazy.
They're not going to look the same when we come back. And I don't know what we're going to do with that. And
you're going to need AI
to do some computer work. I mean, the same thing they do when they make, when they make De Niro and Pacino younger. And
that looked horrible, though.
It looked a bit off. Don't forget, it's the same thing. If you go back to 1997 and Titanic and the computer-generated stuff that they did then, everybody's like, oh, my God. If you look at it today, you're going, But, everything is going to get better.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, just the effects and how we shoot a movie now compared to, we don't use film anymore a lot. I mean, some
digital
directors would still want to use film, but it's just, and you get really talented guys in coming up and they're shooting a movie on this.
I've seen little stuff get shot with cameras that I would not expect to be used.
Yeah.
It's baffling when it comes out.
Nice. There's a couple that come out pretty good, But I mean, you got to worry about lighting, you got to worry about sound, you got to worry about, people don't understand. For every minute you see on the screen, let's say for a major motion picture, I would say it's probably about 12 hours worth of work to get that one minute.
So crazy.
I'm just been lucky to do what I love to do. I just finished a series called Plan B, which was a French series, and now they're doing it in English for this is the second season, and had a great time on that. So that'll be out in September probably, and it's
everything goes well.
Yeah, well, again, if everything goes well, but this is CBC, so it's Canadian.
Okay, so yeah, I don't have to worry.
I'm really happy about that. I mean, you know, Derry, I don't know what's going to happen there because everything's on hold. So
what shocks me is that it's on hold for so long, because if it's unreasonable requests, I get why it would take longer. But to receive residuals from a new platform that they're going to be distributing on doesn't seem unreasonable. It seems logical.
No. But again, it's politics. There's a lot of stuff with the producers. They basically think that the actors, you know, okay, don't forget, you've got, you know, your A-list, you know, multi-millionaires making hundreds of million dollars on movies, like, you know, God knows what the gang made on Barbie, but it's substantial, a lot, right? Yeah. But most of the actors, probably 98% of them, make under $50,000 a year. Probably a lot more of them make less than 25. So, you know, the producers are going to say, "Well, you know, we'll let them sweat for a couple of months, and then when they start losing their houses, we'll own them."
I heard that was a strategy with the writer's strike too, and I didn't like that when I heard that.
And that's exactly what they tried to do. But everybody, I think it is. If they cave in now, it's the death of the industry as far as we know it, as far as the acting community is concerned. So
if the actors cave.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so we're not going to cave. I think that they're going to finally come to something. And there's different times, right? The writers are back now. So they don't really need the actors right now, because the writers have got to write up the shows and they got to do everything as far as the scripts are concerned. Come pilot season, which would be in February, when all the new shows are developed and shot and everything else, that's going to hurt the producers more. So what I think is going to happen is maybe they get something done by next month, but by January they'll come up with something. I just hope that the union comes up with the best that they can get from the producers and don't settle for, you know, too much of a compromise.
Do you find it hard to land roles cross border? Is it easier on one side of the border than the other?
It's nowadays it's a lot easier, because, you know, don't forget, back in the old days, you used to go to the casting director's offices, you used to go and do the auditions live. Now you do the audition self-tapes, which I think it was because of COVID, but yeah. Now even though COVID's over, we'll see, you're still doing self-tapes, which I prefer to do.
I was going to ask, do you prefer?
I much prefer to do self-tapes, because then, you know, you don't have to. I mean, I remember driving from here when I was living in Montreal to Toronto, going into an audition for 5 minutes and driving back. You know, so, yeah, that's.
Especially if you don't land the gig.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, you know, I when I've talked to other actors who are up and coming, they say, you know, first of all, what's it like? You explain that to them, but, you know, learning to audition and learning to act are two different things, because when you're acting and you've got the role, the pressure's off, and then you've got everything working with you. You've got hair, you got makeup, you got your costume, you've got your props, you've got everything to make the character come to life. Auditioning, you're sitting in a room, in a chair, and you know, for the first one, you'll have maybe two people there. And then, you know, if you get to the callbacks and everything else, you know, you may have 5 to 10. I've been to a callback, there were 20 people sitting in the room. So it's so much better because you can set up your lighting the way you like it. You can take your time, and then you can put your best work forward, and then you send it off. But, you know, I equate acting, if you want a comparison, to baseball. So in baseball, if you hit 3 hits out of 10 times at bat, you're a superstar, right? Acting, if you're getting one audition in 20, you're doing really, really good. So, you know, 19 out of 20 times, it's rejection. And you can't take it personal, because there are so many reasons. First of all, there's a heck of a lot of talented people out there. Second of all, you have to believe in yourself, but you can't get depressed about it. It's you have to have a really thick skin. There's a lot of rejection in it. You got to love what you're doing. And I've been lucky enough that I've made a living out of it, which is very hard to do. But I don't want to be famous. And I just like being work, you know, because I've seen what happens with the famous. I mean, when I was in here we go. I'm going to have a senior moment here.
Oh.
God, she's going to kill me when I don't remember her name.
I remember hanging out with these kids.
Hang on. It's going to come. I shot it's a movie on the road. We shot in Argentina. Kristen Stewart.
Oh, shit.
So we're
I got a story about Kristen Stewart.
Okay. Well, go ahead with yours.
No, I had seen her. This is the girl from Twilight, right?
Yeah.
Dude, I had seen her at I was the Hollywood Film Awards in 2013 on the red carpet.
Yep.
She rolled her eyes at me, by the way. I said hi and she rolled her eyes. I didn't like that, but I understood why. I didn't realize how mean the paparazzi was.
Oh, this is horrific.
They were yelling stuff at her like, no, don't be a bitch. Look over here. Oh, and I was like, there's camera. Okay, you're being real. How come nobody cares that they're yelling at this girl? And her, it's like she was used to it. She was like, all right.
Oh, yeah, but here, I'll give you a perfect example. So we fly into Buenos Aires and we're at the airport. We had to transfer airports because we're flying to a place called Angostura, which is another 1,300 kilometers away, near the border, way down south on the border with Chile. And so she wanted to go out for a cigarette. And I said, oh, yeah, we'll go out for a smoke. So I'll go out. And the AD comes up. No, you can't do that. You know, she goes, well, why not? Why can't I go? You know why. No. She wants to have a normal life, be able to do what she wants to do. But then we go out and there's this girl there. Oh, can I take a picture? Can I take a picture? She goes, yeah, okay. So yeah. And Crystal goes, oh, everybody in, right? So we all get into that picture was out on the internet 5 minutes after we had taken
it. Oh, yeah, of course.
So now we fly by plane to Angostura. We get there and we get driven to our hotel and we get into the hotel and she was shooting. We went out, a couple of the other cast members, and we found this really, really great steakhouse. It's really good restaurants. And they're great for wine and they're great for beef. So,
oh, Argentina?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, steaks, man.
So I said the next day to Kristen, I said, yeah, we found this really cool steak place. She goes, you wanna go out for dinner? Oh, yeah, okay, great. But by the time, this is 24 hours, okay, they had found out where she was staying. They had driven 1,300 kilometers. They had, and there was about 1,000 of them who had surrounded the hotel to the point where she couldn't get out of the hotel. I don't want that.
What a life.
Okay, I like going to the store. Somebody goes, oh, you look familiar. Did we go to high school together? Oh, maybe, you know. I did this movie called Human Trafficking with Amir Sorvino, Donald Sutherland.
He does that in real life.
So I went to Bangkok actually to shoot that and it was a lot of fun.
How cool was that?
That was very cool. Yeah. I didn't like Bangkok that much, but I went afterwards to Koh Samui. And Phuket, and it's paradise down there.
Yeah,
so,
it's that blue water.
But I mean, Bangkok, because we were shooting, it was all about human trafficking and everything else, right? So we actually shot in the red light district in some of the parts. And we actually shot in one of the bordellos. And I was talking to one of the women there, and just it's scary. What happens? So the movie came out. It had a great message, but I played a part. My agent Susan Gladden called up, and she says, "Well, they want you for this role." I go, "Okay." She goes, "But you're playing a pedophile," and I went, "Oh, I don't think I'll do that." You know, she goes, "Well, no, it's nothing. You know, it's just inferred, right? You're a well respected doctor." I said, "Nah, look, I'm on a kid's show, and I'm gonna pass." She goes, "Well, you have to go to Thailand to shoot it." Oh, I could do that, right? So now we go.
If I
shoot
get the
it.
Opportunity to be okay. a pedophile in real life, I will play one.
So, but I come back. The movie airs, and it's really good. The message to the movie is excellent. But I'm in IGA and I'm at the cash and there's a person in front of me, there's five people behind me and I just got my stuff and I'm just, and then the cashier is there and she's like, boop, 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 boop. She goes, T'étais dans le film Trafic humain, hein? And I went, yeah. She goes, the doctor, hein?
Oh,
I went,
that's
yeah.
what you get recognized for.
Avec le petit gars, hein? Yeah. I went like, movie.
Yeah, it's a movie, guys. It's not really me. Like,
not real, right? But
I'm glad you questioned it because I had my previous agent, when I started getting a bit bigger in comedy in French,
right.
She's like, here, I got a role for you. There's a, what's the cop show called here?
19-2?
District
31. Okay. So she goes, I just want you to know, you're going to play a pedophile and you have these juvenile, like 15-year-old hookers. And I was like, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, why not? I go, because it's going to be the first time that, like, Monsieur, Madame, tout le monde sees me in Quebec.
Yeah.
I want him to come to my comedy shows. I'm not going to, and she couldn't understand why. Yeah. And then she got back to me. She's like, I got another role for you. Full frontal nudity?
No.
I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. This is the first time they're going to see me on screen. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Not my
age. No, I won't do. No. Because if I take my clothes off, everybody's going to see this.
Everyone's leaving.
Yeah, everybody's, put your clothes back on. It's okay.
I love that you questioned it. You're like, nah.
No, you have to because you, as an actor, you draw lines on what you're comfortable with doing and what you're not comfortable with doing. It's the same thing in real life, right? Now, people turn around and say, oh, well, you could act it. Yeah, okay. Well, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Also, you have a role. You have so much work behind you to back it.
Yeah.
It's a little different, too, because you could also pick and choose. And even if you do it, it's not the end of the world. Whereas someone like me, who was going to be the first thing people were going to see, I was like, you can't associate me.
No, I mean, maybe later on down the road or something like that. If he's really, you know, if you're, I don't know, doing, a production of Hair and there's that, you know, that nudity in it there.
Yeah, right? That's
that's a different story.
And you made it to a certain level. Yeah.
Then you go, okay, I can do that. You know what I'm saying? Even like, it's just like, you know, even when you're doing love scenes and stuff like that. You know, hey, that's a lot of fun. No,
it must be awkward as fuck.
Well, yeah, because, you know, don't forget, you're kissing somebody.
There's
you don't 50 know,
people there.
And there's 50 people watching. And the camera's like right there, you know. You do it and get through it. And, you know, that's I'm older now, so I don't have to do the love scene.
There's boners because I love acting.
The cop now.
I'm passionate about my craft.
You know, so.
I just realized I'm very bad with boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You, for real, or are you just saying that for?
For real.
Yeah. Yeah, no one wants to act with him anymore.
I don't blame him.
No.
Did Broadway? Kidding. Did Broadway ever interest you?
Broadway, no. And I'll tell you why.
I want to hear that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like being able to, if I make a mistake, I say, I'll take that shot again. I'll take that scene. Okay, I'll do that. Take it again. On Broadway, you're alive, right? And it scares the hell out of me, right?
Have you ever done any theater?
Nope.
Interesting.
I've done a little bit, but again, I wouldn't mind doing theater probably. I wouldn't mind even doing Broadway probably, but because Jane had done a movie with Gary Sinise called Snake Eyes with Brian De Palma. And Nick Cage.
Snake Eyes.
She played the redhead in it, and then who ends up being one of Gary Sinise's cohorts. And spoiler alert.
They filmed that here.
It was the last. They shot it at the Forum.
Yes.
The old Forum before they tore it apart. So anyway, I was running Bourbon Street at the time, and Gary actually used to play in a band back in Chicago. He hadn't played in 20 years, and they put together a band with some of the people on the set. And Jane said, well, you know, my guy's got a, he's running a club. Why don't we put together a night? So we did. It turned into an amazing evening. It was like Hollywood came to the West Island of Montreal. So we had like Brian De Palma, we had Gary up on stage. Charlie Sheen shows up. That was fun.
When he showed up, was he already in party mode?
No, he was good, but he went into party mode.
There we go.
Right? So, and I mean, like, you know, a glass of vodka for him was like that size of that Tim Hortons glass, right? And he would drink it like that.
And that was just the preliminaries.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he was a fun guy, nice guy, until he had too much. But that's like everybody.
That's else, I was right? about to say, yeah.
So anyway, but Gary liked it so much and had so much fun that he came back and did it again at the club. And then later on afterwards, he started the Lieutenant Dan Band, which goes out to all of the veterans associations and stuff like that and raises funds for them. And it was because of Jane getting him to do the first night back. And so we're kind of responsible for that. So we go to New York, and we're going to Broadway. We're going to see Death of a Salesman with Gary Sinise in it. And because he's another one of those talents that you just go,
I want to be
20% of as good as he is. I'll be happy, you know? Yeah. So there's an usher coming by, and I said, can you get a message to Mr. Sinise? And he said, he looks at me like, oh, you know. I said, just tell him that Jane and Larry are in the crowd. From Montreal and to break a leg. So, okay. He walks off, so I don't think anything. About 10 minutes later, he comes back and he goes, Mr. Day? And I went, yes? Uh-huh. He goes, Mr. Sinise would like to see you after the show, so could you sit here? And then when the show's over. So we watch the show, and he knocks it out of the park. He's amazing in it. And so then we wait. Everybody leaves. The theater's empty. And he brings it. We have to follow him. But we had to follow him, and we had to walk across the stage. And both Jane and I looked at each other, and we had to do it. We stopped in the middle of the stage and I went, yeah, I can see why they like this a lot. This is really cool. And then we went and saw Gary, and he was, he's a great guy. And he didn't have to do that.
No, it was just a good dude move.
Yeah, but he said, no, he says, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be doing the Lieutenant Dan stuff. And you gotta, like you were saying about Kristen, people are human, right? And when they are put on that limelight, which you cannot understand, you don't have a life anymore. It just goes out the window. And I mean, yes, you're making millions of dollars, you're getting well paid for it.
But can't enjoy them the way you would if you were a private citizen.
I like going to the grocery store, right? I like going out. I like doing what we do. I know that's why we started Strangers in the Night, which is the charity event that I do every year. Which is, I like to be able to live, and a lot of them can't because of everything that happens with fans. But it's the paparazzi that's just.
I said in 2013, I learned that when I heard how they were mad at, like, dude, don't be a bitch, turn around. I didn't know that's how they spoke. I thought it was going to be more like, hey, can I get a photo? Yeah, I didn't realize that they'll call you names.
It used to be, but not anymore.
That's why people snap.
Right. Well, that's why they get followed, and look what happened to Princess Diana. I mean,
Well, I got my theories on that one.
So do I. So, but, you just get used to it.
Yeah, just...
I could never get used to it, though, so that's why... I'm
that
really
level?
Happy.
That level's insane.
No, because I'm really happy with where I am and what I'm doing. I'm able to work. I'm able to do the work that I do, and I can go home and not get bugged. I can walk down the street. That's
amazing.
That's heaven.
Yeah,
you're... It's like, I respect, you as a stand-up comedian. My father was that for many, many years.
Very cool.
Oh, yeah. And I remember I was brought up, and there was... Back in those days, it would have been people nobody would remember anymore, but like getting up in front of even 20 people and they're sitting there going, okay, sucker, make me laugh. That's the hardest job of the world. Not acting, okay? What you do, I've seen some of the major, major masters of comedy. My favorite would have been... George Carlin.
That's a very good picture.
To me, the epitome, and I was lucky enough to see him live.
Very lucky.
And he just was incredible. And I met him backstage after. His autograph, by the way, was not a signature. It was a smiley face.
When you met him, how was he? Good dude.
Hey, he came out and spent time with everybody and talked to us. I mean, I was like a kid back then, right? Yeah, like my parents started show business back in the days when, I mean, it was huge. I mean, every star came to Montreal to perform. I mean, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., you name it, Louis Armstrong, all the major bands. My parents were dancing at a place called the Danceland back in 1948. The Tommy Dorsey Band is playing. Tommy Dorsey sees my parents dancing and brings them backstage, and he says, "How'd you like to be the featured dance act for the band?" And that's how they got into show business.
What a different time. Oh, you have Montreal no history. Idea. It was such
You know, I mean, I can remember this city, you know, working in the Olympics. I mean, it was a, you know, it was a 3-week party with a 30-year hangover, but what a party it was. Even up, you know, through the rest of it. I mean, I go downtown today and I, you know, it's just depressing.
Sad, yeah, to see what happened.
It's, the model of what a club was didn't change for 70, 80 years. I mean, the clubs in Montreal started in the 20s because of Prohibition and then just never stopped. And it got to the 40s and the 50s. It was all vaudeville. It was, and then it was shows and it was cabarets. And then the 60s, it was more, a changeover to discotheques, as they called them back then, because it was records and not bands that were playing. And then in the 70s, it was us DJing. I remember my dad saying, you know, they could work 50 weeks a year, 1 week gigs in each place and not hit the same place twice. That's how many clubs there were in the city at the time.
It was the first referendum that really started changing the city, right?
76, when the PQ got elected.
People started to leave.
Yeah, that was the main thing. Everybody got scared. That's what started to create
Toronto. Toronto would not have been as big of a city.
Toronto was a bean town. Montreal. I mean, it's sad when you take a look at a picture of the skyline of Toronto in 1970, a skyline of Montreal, and a skyline today of both cities. That skyline in Toronto should have been Montreal.
Yeah.
You know, but
I know that
people cut off their nose to spite their face. And it's happening today again. I mean, I thought I was, you know, 40 years I've gone through this, right? 50 years actually now of everything from the beginning. I remember the bombings. I remember the cross kidnapping and the FLQ and everything else. And
you were around during
that. Oh, God, yeah.
Was that a scary time? Or
yeah, sure it was.
Really? Yeah.
I mean, you know, because, I mean, you know, there was bombings in the 60s and some people were killed. But when they started to kidnap people. It was a heavy time, and then
businesses started to leave.
Here's the thing, right? And especially today, I mean, I went through all this, there was an equilibrium where Anglophones and Francophones, there's not a problem with this.
No,
nobody had a problem with that, but because of certain political parties and because of certain people with political aspirations, they had to create problems. So that they could pretend there's a problem and say that they've got to come in like Superman and save the French language. French language is not dying because you've got students from other parts of the country and other countries coming here to go to school. It's just Legault is basically, he's a linguistic racist. He hates
English.
Yes, I'm talking about right now.
I don't know if he hates. I think it is.
He's even said it.
Oh, okay, if he does, because what I would think is, I think it's political. I've said this to a lot of people. I feel like it's political. In order to get voted in, it's what you said. You need an enemy.
Yep.
He's like, who am I going to find? I got this. Because in reality, speaking both languages is not a handicap. If anything, it's a superpower.
It's exactly. But they don't want that because they want to keep everybody. It's like the Catholic Church in the 40s wanted to keep everybody French-Canadian, barefoot and pregnant.
That's what they were doing, huh?
Right? They didn't want them because they wanted to keep them here as Parizeau said, lobsters in a pot, right? Then you've got the Anglophones at the time. And there was, seriously, a major discrepancy. And the Francophones had a right to say what they did because but then the balance came about all of a sudden. I mean, before Legault was here, the French Canadians, Quebecois, they don't have a problem. There was no problems going on. And then all of a sudden it's manufactured. And he's going to play to the base. It's not the 514 that is going to get elected.
Yeah.
It's going to be the 450. It's going to be outlying areas. And he panders to the fears of everything. And it's scary, but it works. And it's still, it's like what Trump did. Now, you know, what's happened? Your economy is terrible. Montreal, which should have been a powerhouse of a city.
So it was supposed to be one of North America's. It was the envy.
It was the greatest city. I love New York, but this was the greatest city in the world back then. Now, I mean, you go downtown at Saturday night and there's nothing going on. You know, I mean, we used to come out of the clubs at 3 o'clock. I mean, the clubs would stay open till 6 in some areas, like the Limelight and the Rendezvous and stuff like that. There were traffic jams on, you know, Reddy-Levesque, St. Catherine, De Maisonneuve, and Sherbrooke.
People were able to make money back then. The city had money.
That's at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. You know, and everybody came out of the clubs. They go to the restaurants. I mean, the restaurants were all open, you know, 24 hours, a lot of them, because they had the crowd after, you know, we used to finish work and we go have breakfast or we go eat something at like Ville Marie or these other restaurants downtown that were open. It's just sad, you know, and I really feel a little depressed about the fact that the kids today won't experience what it was like.
And they don't even have the same opportunities, because the biggest thing I hear is that right now everyone's broke. But at that time, if you wanted to work in Montreal, there was opportunity for whatever. Yeah. Everyone was making money. Yep. The city was booming. Yep. It was happy.
Yep. And then now, you know, I mean, the only reason Toronto has a nightlife at all is because there's 250,000 ex-Montrealers living up there.
That's what I was about to say. It's just because of Montreal that Toronto exists the way it does now.
But, you know, it's not going to be easy for the kids today. And again, with everything that's going on, it's a dangerous world out there. You know, when most of your younger generation is not getting news from a news center, they're getting news from TikTok and they're believing it. That's a problem, because TikTok's run by China. So China decides, you know, the propaganda going out. There's nobody coming together anymore and compromising. It's us versus them. It's left versus right. And they're so far left, it's so far right. No, there's no compromise. And if you don't have compromise, then you're headed toward... I mean, I think the United States is going to go into a civil war one day.
They've been saying that for a while. I hope not. I love the U.S. I love the States, but they're so polar. But it's not just them. It's kind of like what you said about China. It feels like it's a psyop from other countries, maybe even China.
Yep.
Because the polarization, it started in the universities, went so far the last couple of years that it seems manufactured, like someone was behind it. It's too much.
A lot of it is manufactured, and a lot of it is coming from China, and a lot of it is
which is a smart move on their part.
A lot of it is coming from Russia as well.
Yeah. And, smart move, though, strategically.
Like, strategically, they're not stupid. You know, they know what they're doing. You know, and if we don't, you know, if we don't have strong leadership, which we really don't right now.
I was about to say we don't. There's not one politician in North America that you could look at and you're like, there we go.
I mean, that's the sad part is that, you know, titans of business and everything else are you know, politics is like frowned upon where it wasn't before.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, was everybody perfect back in the day? No. I mean, do you think John F. Kennedy would be able to get elected if he was here today with the way he was? No, because the times are different. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, you know, and I've worked in a couple of movies that were like based on, you know, they're like end of the world type of things and things like that. Or Arrival, for instance, which is aliens coming down. I mean, yeah, if you don't think there's something else out there, we're the only thing in the world and the universe, yeah, think again.
How much of, when you were on Arrival, how much of the script did Villeneuve want to keep anything secret or he wanted everyone to know what's going on?
We had the script in advance, so it's like...
I found the concept interesting. I'm a big time travel guy.
Yep.
So I loved mixing those things together.
Yep.
And it did make me think like, oh yeah, that is, you know, we take everything for granted. Like if somebody comes here, we should be able to communicate with them. But if just the method of communication...
That's it.
...is alien to us.
Yep.
And comprehending that is the key.
Well, it won't be like us talking together in a language or something like that. It'll probably come down to something to do with mathematics, which is that's universal.
That's universal. Right? Yeah. That's such a good idea.
Yeah, but it's like Plan B, the TV show I've just wrapped up on. You know, it's done in French. They did really well with it, and I love the concept. Is that somehow there's this company that if you pay them enough money, you can go back in time. And for a good reason, they will send you back and you have a chance to write something. So this in this series, it's the one who is able to go back is a police officer. I'm her sergeant. And she keeps going back into time. But the problem is every time she goes back and fixes something.
Fucks something else up?
It fucks something else up. And she goes back again. And she tries to do that. And it's, yeah. And it's what happens. And, you know.
I'll tell you about something after the show. I have a time travel script that I wrote. I wanted to do with my buddy. My buddy Rob. He's on a Netflix show. What's it called, bro? Why am I forgetting?
Umbrella Academy.
Okay.
And I had, I'll you're going to laugh since you like time travel.
Because
I was going to ask the parameters of this show. So every time she goes back, it fucks something else up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What do they allow you? Like, let's say if you would say, did somebody in the show would say, I'm going to go back and kill Hitler, for example.
Right.
Would they allow that?
Don't know.
Because you know why I'm questioning? Because what if it would stop you from creating the technology?
Because the company that does it, we don't know who they are, by the way.
I like this.
They take the money off your credit card, but they charge you X amount per day you go back.
Interesting.
So if you have to go back like years, that's going to cost you a lot of money.
But do they bring you back or you have to bring yourself back?
Oh, no, they bring you back.
Okay, so if you can't afford it.
No, they actually come to the door, two of these guys, and carry you away in a truck and take you away. And the next thing you know, you're waking up and you're back.
What a fun concept. Cause I'm a big time. I love time travel.
Well, it was funny because when we're shooting the show and we have to do what they're called the plan Bs, right? So we shoot one and then what happens and then the same scene, but it's a little bit different, right? Cause something else has happened. So it's like the same scene, but not. And then it gets confusing sometimes because okay, which one is it? Are we doing this one or is it this one? And so the scripts are almost the same. And for an actor, that's kind of hard because when you're memorizing stuff,
what's the difference?
There's subtle, a subtle difference and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay, so is there something you prefer? Like, I like that you're into the time travel, but are there scripts that you'll get and you're like, God, I'm all right.
Oh, yeah.
This is the concept I want.
Yeah, there's parts you'll say, okay, if I get it, I get it. And that's okay. That's cool. But there's some where you call your agent up, go, okay, look, I'll work for free on this one. All right, just get me this role. Because
what's your type that you'll go crazy for? What's the type of movie you want to do? Or is it just working with a specific person?
Give you an example. I did a movie once. Susan called me up and she says, well, it's an actor role, which is a five lines or less role. It's they're not big roles, right? And I usually don't do those. I go, well, I don't know. She goes, well, it's 5 days. And I went, okay. Well, no. I said, who's the director? She goes, Bob Rafelson. I went, the Bob Rafelson, like five easy pieces, Bob Rafelson with Jack Nicholson, that Bob Rafelson. And she goes, yeah.
The very same.
I said, are you out of your mind? Of course I'm going to do it, right?
Why are you asking me?
It's with Samuel Jackson. It's with Mila Jovovich.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Oh, no. It's, yeah. So, but again, here's a perfect example of I got on set and you could cut the tension with a knife. It was just.
I wasn't good.
Yeah, Sam was acting up, and he's great with a great actor. Love him to death, but him and the director weren't seeing eye to eye, right?
Really.
So we're doing. I'm done. This is day five of the 5 days that I'm doing, and I'm just there lapping it in. I mean, the guy's a legend, Rafelson, right? And I'm working with Sam Jackson, so it's not work. You know what I mean? So. And I don't have a lot of work because I only had 5 lines, right? So there's I don't have to memorize a lot of stuff, right? So it's great. And then last day, I don't have any dialogue or anything like that, and I'm done to the word, right? Because if you have 5 lines, you're an actor. You get paid X amount of money. Yeah. If you're over 5 lines, you can become a principal. You're paid a lot more money. So I'm to the word, 5 lines. And so we last seen... Jackson's got to say this whole pretty well full page monologue. And at the end of it, arrest her. And I walk off and I'm going to arrest Mila Jovovich. So we're blocking it, which is rehearsing it, right? And action. Just stands there. Arrest her. I went, what? Arrest her. Okay. I go off, right? And I come back and I go, Sam, you going to do that monologue? He goes, That's what he's going to ask you. And when he does, you tell him I'm not Dashiell Hammett.
Is that what he fucking told you?
Because Dashiell Hammett wrote the book that the movie is based on. And he's very flamboyant and, you know, descriptive and everything else. And in retrospect, you know, looking at it, yeah, he's right. Because it was really a long thing that wasn't needed. But he goes, oh, yeah, I'll be in the office there. And he leaves it. Rafelson comes up to me and he goes, motherfucker's not going to say it, is he? And I went, no, he said he's not Dashiell Hammett. And he goes, oh, okay. Well,
it's not.
Okay. The what thing, that'll work. We can do that. I like that. We'll do that. Okay. So just do that. And I go, I can't. He goes, what do you mean? I said, because it'll put me in another category. Because he goes, what's that going to cost? I said, I don't know. He says, you know, can I swear on this? Am I allowed?
Oh, of course,
Okay. He said, fuck it. You really did me a favor by helping me out with this thing. And he said, like, I don't care. Go ahead. Just say the word.
Fucking right. Payday, baby.
Payday. No, well, it's one word. What? Four letters. Was an extra $11,000.
Let's go. That's what I'm talking about.
I'll take that any day.
Oh, that's a good story.
Yeah. So that was fun. But again, I mean, he's passed away now. There's been a few directors I've worked with that are gone and actors as well. And I just feel lucky that I was able to work with them. And there's great ones who would I like to work with? I haven't worked with yet. Scorsese. Oh. I had a chance, didn't get the part. It went to, it was somebody famous, A-list from Hollywood, but... I didn't mind losing out. If I lost out to him, it's okay.
At least you got a shot.
But Scorsese, I would like, yeah, that would be a fun one.
What's his story now? Is he still doing stuff?
Yeah, he just finished one, another one with, he's got Leo in it, and it's kind of a different thing for him. This was the Oklahoma movie. It's more like a Western.
Yeah, the Western. I was about to say.
Okay, about the
oil discovery and the Indians, the indigenous people that had the rights to the oil. Kind of got killed about it. So
he made a movie about that. Okay, that's what it's about. Okay, yeah. I want to watch that.
And it's what happened and how they were treated and stuff like that. So it's
good on Scorsese.
Yeah. So another one I worked with. He's still around. He's about 90 now. Sidney J. Fury. He was the one who really made Michael Caine with the Icarus Files. He did Lady Sings the Blues with Diana Ross, Boys of Company C, which is a really cool Vietnam movie. And I worked with him on three movies with Dolph Lundgren back. And, it's like, movies, the shots become your home movies, and it's like the movie that we shot in Brazil. I mean, we call that our home movie trip to Brazil.
That's what it is. Yeah, when you're having fun.
But just to be able to do that and work together. I mean, I've been with Jane 35 years now.
Congrats.
Yeah, it's, ups and downs, but, you just compromise and listen. I think when people stop listening to each other, that's when you have a problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, people say to me, describe acting, or what's the number one rule in acting, according to you? And, I stole it from Richard Attenborough. Acting, don't get caught doing it.
Oh, that's a good fucking saying. Yeah.
And that to me is,
that's such a good saying.
Yeah. You know.
Attenborough is the Inside the Actor Studio guy, right?
No, Attenborough is a really great actor.
Who's the inside? What's the Inside the Actor Studio guy? You know what I'm talking about? He looks like the devil. He's got that devil mustache.
Yeah. James Lipton.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, you're right.
I'm really impressed. I remembered that, actually. It's interesting because out of all the people you see asking questions on that show, there was really only one that made it really, really big. And you actually see him asking a question when he was a nobody.
Yeah, it was, what's his name? The guy who plays the raccoon for Guardians of the Galaxy. What the fuck's his name, bro? Poseidon? Hangover?
That's right.
What's his name? Why am I blanking now? I'm
because you got to give him something to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper. That's it. Yeah, it was Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper plays Rocket Raccoon.
You just discovered that?
I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the clip. Yeah, I remember watching that. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, you know, and the cool thing about acting is you don't have to retire.
True.
So
you evolve into a new type of role that you can do.
Well, yeah. You know, and it's a joy. I mean, it really is fun. You know, do you mind getting up at the 5 o'clock calls and, you know, working, you know, 16, 17 hour days sometimes? No. You know, I did a movie with Belushi once, and it was just us for 17 hours. And we're sitting there after hour 16, and it's physical. I mean, I played a hitman, and he is a cop, crooked cop. And we have a big fight scene and this whole thing and baseball bats and stuff. And we're sitting there, and it's probably, it had to be 16 hours into it. And he just said, you know, we're the luckiest people in the world. And I looked at him and, yeah, we are.
Yeah, 100%.
So.
Well, goddamn. Honestly, Larry, thank you for this. This has been great.
My pleasure. It's
awesome, awesome time. Before I go, are you on the social media? Like, you like being
people? I don't mind it. Yeah. I mean, I've got, you know, I'm on Facebook, and apparently I'm on Instagram.
Okay. I'm going to have all the links in the description, so if people want, they could follow you there.
Absolutely.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you mind if people follow you and
no,
all that
not
stuff?
At
no,
all.
No. You like that. Okay.
Yeah, not good, at good. All. And if they have any questions or something, just, you know, send
anything
them.
Anything you want them to watch?
Good question. If you want to have some fun, you know, there's an episode of Suits that I did with Megan, which was really cool. She was actually really nice, too.
Really? What really happened nice. To her then?
I don't know. I have a feeling that she had a real bad smear campaign done to her by the palace mafia.
Oh, so you think maybe she's actually good? A good person just comes off as a...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I mean, they've killed another princess, so it's possible.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to disagree with that, okay? yeah, I mean, season 7, episode 11. That was a lot of fun. Gosh. I'd say, you know, wait for Plan B that's coming out.
Okay.
In September. Welcome to Derry is going to be fun.
And I'm excited about
the movie with Richard Gere is called Longing.
Longing. I'm going to watch Longing. Yeah. I can get it today, right? I can get it
Longing. I'm not sure if it's out yet, but it should be on Netflix soon.
Okay.
But I think because of everything with the strike and everything else, and
everything's delayed. So
they may delay releasing it until they can go, because I know it's going to be in the film festival.
I'm very interested in watching Longing.
It's an interesting movie. I mean, it's Richard. And again, another amazing, amazing actor. So yeah, that's another one to watch out for. They just aired. It was on the newest episode of Weird Doc Mysteries. I die in that. I've died a few times. I've died many times. There are many ways. Let me count the ways I've died. It's I've been strangled. I've been shot. I've been killed with an icicle.
One of my dreams is to get killed in a horror movie.
Oh, well, you see, the cool thing about that is, you know, if you're in a horror movie, you get killed, you can come back.
Yeah, even right? better. Yeah,
which happened.
Kill
to me
twice.
And don't ever do a horror movie with a numeral after it. I just say it. You know, like I did Night of the Demons 3, right? And it's like
it was downhill since Night of the Demons 2.
Yeah. So I get killed at the beginning of the movie, but because you know it's a horror movie, I come back. You know,
great thing about it.
Yeah. So, it's like, you know, good or bad, you put yourself out there all the time. And if you are acting and you want to be an actor, don't give up your dream. Follow your dream. Just be ready for a lot of hard work. But, you know, something when you get in front of a camera finally, you start saying lines, it's a lot of fun.
Well said.
We've built this prison cell. Trust ourselves, critically ashamed in all our fame. We'll make a murder, murder, murder stain. Yeah, this is the American dream. You're gonna have to fight if you wanna believe. Just see it all away. We'll be right back.
when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.